Okay, welcome to another episode of the Dance Music Sex Romance Podcast. I'm Zachary Hoskins, and I'm here with Paul Bonomo. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got it right.
Okay. Yeah. Paul Bonomo, who is also, you're a musician, also known as Snacks, and you are currently based, where in Germany are you?
Berlin.
Berlin. Okay, that's the place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I definitely want to hear about that because, Paul, I happen to know you grew up in suburban Maryland, oddly where I'm living right now.
You're in Rockville, right?
I'm in Rockville, yeah. And you were Silver Spring?
I grew up in Wheaton specifically, yeah, okay. Which is like a district of Silver Spring, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and so Paul, this has been a long time in the making. We have been talking about recording this podcast for like at least 2 months now. It's been.
I've been a fan of yours for a while. I've been listening to your podcast, and I think I reached out to you about just that I was a fan, and then we just started communicating, and so here we are.
And I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a while too, because so way back, I think it was maybe the first or second episode of the podcast, I was talking to Jane Jones, mm-hmm. and we were talking about Ben Greenman's book. One of the things that we thought kind of stood out to us, or that was kind of strange, you know, I think it was Jane mentioned that Ben said that he felt that Prince was most sort of appealing, or was most the area or the group of people that he was most kind of liberating to were gay men. And Jane and I were kind of like, I mean, we were sort of like, I don't know about that. But the more I thought about it, there is actually, I felt like we were maybe a little overly dismissive of that idea. And so I've been kind of wanting to revisit that. And you mm-hmm. contacted me, you know, talking about, you kind of wanted to talk about basically that, about Prince's sort of significance to the gay community.
Yeah. And I was always saying that I didn't think that there was enough feedback from people about that. Actually, there wasn't enough of a discourse really about his effect or the gay male fan base he might have. We know about, you know, how, you know, women, and we know that there's a lesbian influence in his life and his work and stuff like that, but there was never enough about, you know, a gay male influence or his effect on them as a community.
I agree. So I'm so glad that we had the opportunity, like partly for me to go back, because I was always like, it comes across like we're being dismissive. Like that's, you know, in the moment, that's not what I meant.
I didn't get that either, actually.
So, okay, well, good. And also just because I think you're right. This is an area, you know, partly because I think especially later in life, and I'm sure we'll get to this to some degree or another, I think Prince, you know, he got more conservative, and I think he was less likely to pay, you know, attention to that side of his fan base and that aspect.
Yeah, and he's said some, you know, kind of dodgy things in interviews, or at least they've been, you know, interpreted as dodgy,
right?
You know?
Right,
and like homophobic jokes and kind of just. Yeah, so we're just weird things like that, that you're sort of like, I can't believe, you know, this is coming out of the, you know, the guy who wrote the Dirty Mind album, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's a disconnect there, you know. It can be a bit, it's problematic. He's problematic.
Oh, definitely.
For some gay men, I think, too. And he's got a real patriarchal thing, too, which is, you know, that can be a wall for some people, that's insurmountable.
Right. Yeah. So I think that this is an important, you know, conversation to have. And I hope that there's more to come out of this. I'm definitely eager to talk about it. And this also, it dovetails with sort of the research that I'm doing now, where I sort of am in Prince's career is, I think, a moment when if we could ever say that he was sort of courting the gay community or sort of appealing to the gay community, you know, 1980, 81, even into 82. I think that's the time. But let's talk a little bit about, let's go back to that time. And, you know, I'm curious to hear about your background, partly just because it's a long way from Silver Spring to Berlin.
And
also, you know, I would just love to hear, you know, when you discovered Prince, like how you discovered him, all of that stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm a child of the 80s. I mean, I'm an adolescent of the 80s, actually. That's when I came of age. And I had a lot of older brothers and a sister growing up. And music was always in our household. And right from my parents down, we all took piano lessons. Records were playing all the time. My brothers got me into all kinds of music, like... my oldest brother was into like Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And then we were all obsessed with the Beatles. And, my brother, the middle brother got me into like punk and the Stones and all this kind of stuff. So I grew up, you know, on rock and on music, you know, ever since a young age. Radio was on all the time. But, you know, around the 1999 Purple Rain era is, when I discovered Prince, you know, and when he was on the radio all the time and when he just, you know, he really blew up.
Right.
And I really felt that like Prince was like my discovery, you know, like he was mine. Like no one else in my family was really into him. Like I was the one who discovered him. I got into him. He really spoke to me personally. And he was like, he was kind of like my Beatles, you know, my Hendrix, you know, at that particular time. That's really how I felt about it even then. And I think the first track, I remember the first thing I ever bought was the Delirious 45. Some other things, and I was like, okay, you know, at first I thought he was a band. I didn't even know much about what Prince was at all. Mm-hmm. And then that Delirious came on the radio, and that keyboard line, it just grabbed me. I thought it was the most hilarious, most infectious, funkiest thing ever. And I was also kind of forging my own path into like listening to funk and dance music and R&B. And because I came from suburban Maryland, which was, I grew up near Washington, D.C.
Right.
And radio was pretty segregated then. I mean, I actually think it still is in a way. I mean, you had like the pop and rock stations, then you had the quote unquote black stations or R&B stations. And I was gravitating more toward those. I was listening to everything, but you know, I was listening to like Washington, D.C. Go-Go, which is a funk scene there.
Right.
And a bunch of other stuff. And on that, you know, on those radio stations, and then Prince comes along, and it encapsulated everything for me. You know, and there was drum machines, it was dance, it was funk, and then you know, with Delirious, that really sucked me in, and then I just got more and more into him, you know, and more into his aura. And then when Purple Rain exploded, I remember I wasn't allowed to see it because I grew up in a Catholic family. And, you know, we weren't allowed to see R movies if we weren't 17 yet. So I guess I was 14 when that came out. So I couldn't see it in theater, but somehow I was able to finagle it on videotape when it came out on video. So I did saw it on video, home video. And then we were also part of this record music club. And I remember ordering 1999, Purple Rain, The Time, and Apollonia 6 all at once. Yeah, and they all showed up. So on one day, and I would say from then on is when the obsession began. Mm. You know, it was like a whole world opening up to me, and you know, discovering all of his side projects and everything. And yeah, so from then on, I was hooked. And I was playing later in high school, and like my 1 year in college, I was playing in a Minneapolis style band. I was a keyboardist. Too. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you know, what Prince and the Minneapolis Sound was doing on keyboards was totally, wholly influential on me and my music and everything. And I was in a band. We were playing that kind of thing. And so, you know, I was not only was I into the music, I was also emulating it.
Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, I have to imagine. So you said you were like 14 when, Purple Rain came out. I have to imagine that was an important time for your development, you know, is with your identity, your sexuality, all of that kind of stuff happening at the same time as Prince. So,
it completely dovetailed. I mean, and then after discovering, you know, getting into Purple Rain in 1999, I'm like, oh my God, he's got all these other albums too. I start buying those one by one. And I had a friend who I was making music with, and he was actually also the first guy that I had sex with. And, you know, we would just like pour over Dirty Minds together, you know, and like, I mean, you know, he was experimenting. I pretty much knew I was gay at this point. But here we are, you know, like pouring over the cover of Dirty Mind and getting into the lyrics and everything. And I mean, like, you know, I can't imagine a better album to like discover your sexuality with than right. Dirty Mind. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just all there, you know, and it's just, that's what Prince was to me. He was like, you know, I never was attracted to him. Like, I was never like, oh, I want to have sex with Prince. Mm-hmm. But he was more like, I just wasn't feeling about him that way. I was feeling about him like he was like a co-conspirator, sort of. Like a buddy. Like a sort of like someone who just got it. Somebody who just got sex and got, you know, like sexuality and the freedom of it and the individuality of it and everything. And I mean, because I was, you know, it was a struggle definitely coming out for me. You know, it was the middle of the 80s,
right.
Hyper AIDS, Reagan, right. Plus I'm raised Catholic, you know, and to have somebody like Prince come along and offer all that freedom, you know, that message of individuality and everything in the music. And then, you know, just and all the side groups too, you know, like with like Vanity and Apollonia and everything. And the time and everything, there was this whole like camp element,
right? Yeah.
There was just such a campiness to the whole thing that I didn't even identify as camp at the time. You know, I didn't even know what camp was. You know, that was too like gender studies for me at that point,
right?
Or whatever. But it was also there too. So, you know, it was an extremely large influence, not just on me musically, but on me as character-wise and in my growing up and development.
That's always sort of interested me. So, you know, Prince in the early 80s, especially when he was first kind of being discovered by the rock press, a lot was kind of made about him being racially ambiguous and sexually ambiguous. And, you know, since then, of course, a lot of people, as far as the race thing goes, a lot of black people have said, we always knew he was black. Like he really wasn't ambiguous. I'm curious if like, did you always know Prince was straight or was that ambiguity a little bit more convincing?
I think it was, I think I kind of always knew that he was, you know,
or maybe really, let's say not gay. That's probably better.
I mean, I think maybe I was like, oh, he could be bisexual,
right,
or something like that. But I it's funny because I wasn't that interested. I mean, I didn't, I wasn't like, oh, he's my gay hero or something.
Right.
He was just, he was just my sexuality hero. You know, like he was just my hero in terms of like owning it, you know, whatever your sexuality is or however you want to express it is owning it. And he also, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, preparing for this interview. It wasn't just about sexuality that I related to with him, but it was the intense desire that was in his work. You know, one thing about when you're growing up gay, and I know this is true even today when things are a lot more permissive in the U.S. and in the world in general, but still definitely in the 80s, you know, you internalize this feeling that, like, you know, your sexuality, your choice, or your lifestyle is, you know, is the wrong one. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's not, society is not set up for this at all. And so you're outside of the margins. And in some way that makes it, you feel that it's going to be doubly hard for you to, you know, to find love, to find acceptance, to find happiness. And you start to feel that, like, you yourself are actually unlovable. You know, you're like not deserving of love. And so when you find an object of attraction, like someone you're attracted to, it just becomes, I would become very obsessed. You know, I would fixate on a person, or I would fixate on, you know, a relationship that I had to have, and it would just consume me. And Prince totally spoke to that for me with songs like, Something in the Water Does Not Compute, which is so consumed with desire and obsession and, you know, Automatic, like the lyrics to Automatic where he's like, he'll do anything, you know, and it's so, he's so ready to be submissive, you know, and like their lyric, and even when I'm right, I'll be wrong, you know, it's automatic. Or we've talked about the track Tambourine, and I feel that, like, you know, it was that kind of like intensity to the desire that I really that I could really relate to, that I felt that we had a connection to it. Whether or not he was actually gay or straight, to me that was kind of like, okay, clearly he loves women, you know.
Right.
Like, I mean, he to me it was like he loves women so much he wants to be a woman, you know. It's like that's his obsession. It was the obsessiveness that I could so relate to that really, really spoke to me. You know, beyond sexuality.
Yeah, yeah, and that sort of echoes things that I've heard a lot of women say is
the
desire element.
Yeah, in your conversations with Jane, I got that too. Yeah,
because you know it's sort of similar. Female desire is maybe not as sort of explicitly prejudiced against as homosexual desire, but it's
sure.
It's certainly something that is sort of policed and discouraged. And
oh,
I think Prince is sort of he kind of made it okay. It seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
To desire.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's exactly what it's like. Making it okay, giving you the license to be like, you know, you can desire this. You can, you know, express desire in this way, you know, and it's, you know, and he would do that. He wouldn't be afraid to do that. And he was a man doing that, you know, a straight man doing that. And that was just so revolutionary. It still is. And then you go to the sort of more obvious ways, which, I mean, he would appeal to the gay community in terms of the androgyny, you know,
right,
and everything like that. And of course, that's, you know, that's a no-brainer right there. I mean, he's coming on in briefs, and makeup and leg warmers and heels, you know. I mean, you know, how is the gay community not going to respond to that?
Right. So that period to me reads, it's not necessarily that I think that Prince was gay, but I think that period, his presentation, it's inescapably reads queer, you know. The little mustache, the trench coat, the briefs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost a stereotype. It feels to me like he was very deliberately playing with that identification, and I'm sure that he was aware that a good amount of his fan base at the time was gay.
Well, I also just think that he wanted to. I mean, I think he wanted to just show being a pervert. You know, I just think it was right. Like perversion. You know, he wanted right. to be the front man pervert. You know, unashamedly, and I, you know, I've been influenced with that too. I mean, after actually my this band that I was in when I we were doing a set in Minneapolis Sound. I got into queer punk and homo punk and the gay zines and stuff like that. And I started to make my own like solo cassette tapes. And it was more like punk, you know, punk oriented and aggressive. And it was kind of getting away from straight ahead, like funk and dance stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I was performing this stuff, I mean, I was actually kind of doing this similar thing. I just wanted to be as like just nasty as possible and kind of trashy and slutty, you know? And so like, you know, in that way, again, it was a way that I could relate to how Prince was presenting himself as well.
In DC at that time, like, you know, late 80s, was Prince an influence on that kind of scene, or by then was he kind of, I mean, he was pretty mainstream by, you know, 87 or 88, whatever.
Sure. I mean, I don't know if it was how he would specifically influence the, you know, the DC scene himself. I mean, it's like, to me, what was funny was that, like, I mean, I in his heyday, you know, when it was in Purple Rain, everyone was into him. Right. And then it was almost like overnight he became a cult artist again, because he didn't have any advertising for Around the World in a Day, which all of a sudden just dropped one day. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was like the only one in my class and in my entire school that seemed to even know about it, mm-hmm. you know, because I was like so upset. I think me and one other person was like that big of a Prince fan knew about it. And I was like, I remember I didn't have any money, and I was like running around begging people like, oh, can I borrow like a couple bucks? Like the new Prince album comes out today. I have to have it like today, you know? And so I think it was kind of the similar thing in like other cities. It was kind of like, you know, there were people who were like really on board for Purple Rain because it was so mainstream. And then it got into two camps, those who kind of fell off and then those who were on for like the whole ride. But in terms of like, I would say funk music and stuff in DC, it was mainly like go-go was one thing and go-go was one thing. And then we had like the hardcore punk scene with like Discord Records and stuff like that. And I didn't fit into either one of those. So, right. I mean, I was doing my own thing. That's actually why I left the city, because I just didn't feel like I was fitting in anymore.
Mm-hmm. So when you left DC, did you go straight to Germany, or biography?
I had when I was in this queer punk thing, I had this sort of a one man project called Fag Bash. And then I took that idea and I went to San Francisco and I started a band with a few other guys using the same name. So I lived in San Francisco for like 2.5 years and I was doing that band there. And then after a while, we all sort of one by one moved back to the East Coast, and I ended up in New York. And New York is where I started getting like heavily back into like electronic music and from like a DJ and producer perspective. And so I was in New York from 93 to 2002. No, 95, 2002.
Okay.
And then from New York is when I came to Berlin. So
okay.
Been here since then. I think what's interesting is to talk about his the way he would, you know, like he understood a kind of sense of camp with someone like Morris Day, who was actually so narcissistic and so femmy and so gay in a way, you know, with all this yes and the snapping of the fingers and stuff like that, which, like, you know, that's like practically a drag queen, you know.
Yeah.
And same with Vanity Six. I mean, I remember, like, I didn't really get an African American gay friend of mine who used to work with the Tower. I didn't really get really how like super camp that record was until I saw him listening to it. And I saw the way he was reacting to it, and I was like, man, this is so gay. Like, it's such a, like, I mean, I don't know why there aren't more drag queens doing like that entire album.
I've actually said the same thing.
Yeah. Like,
especially if a girl answers Don't Hang Up is, I mean, it's drag. And
yes.
And in the part where Prince is there is literally drag because he's supposed to be a woman.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. I know, totally.
Hello. This is Vanity. Is Jimmy home?
Yes, but he's taking a shower.
Oh, I see. Did he just take out the trash?
No, that's something he used to do. Now he's taking out me.
Oh, I see. Well, tell him he left his pants over here last night. What's the matter? Is he going swimming?
Well, I know we was gonna go, but he said he did that last night.
Well, sugar, I know about a great party. Why don't you bring us your car?
So sorry, baby, but I never go to singles bars.
Singles? Is that what you think? Tramp, I'm dating your dad.
Oh, he died about 7 years back. Ain't that just too bad?
Well, that's how we like him. Tall, stiff, and ready. That's positively more than I can say for dead Jimmy.
That's because he was swallowing vitamin E, now he's swallowing me.
Oh, you mean you were swallowing him? Why don't you just tie a mattress to your back?
I'm gonna need it, cause if I ever see your face, I'm gonna fall and have a heart attack.
All it's gonna fall is the wig off your head. Now what you think about that?
I think I'd rather wear a wig than run a motel for roaches, ants, and lice, dogs, and cats in my hat.
Hey, that's gone too far. Here, give me the phone. Hey, tramp, take a bath and puke. What's more, you can kiss where the sun don't shine. If that don't work, we can do. You see, the only kind of man that would play with you is one that plays with himself. None of my friends could stand the sight of you, much less the smell. And if I wasn't a lady, I'd take my money and buy you a brand new face. Then I'd take my underwear and stick it in your mouth and you'd love it because you got no taste. And if that don't work, call back at that daddy and show him what you look like now. Honey, I bet he'd never come back because you want ugly cow. Girl, you tell your boyfriend Jimmy he can go get hit by a car. Because as far as I see it, he can't afford to buy the beat of this star. There's two things we can't stand. One's a jive talk man. The other's a jive talk man with no money. Can you dig it? Click.
And it's like, how did he know all of this stuff, you know? And it's like, how did he, yeah. And for someone who was so unabashedly, quote unquote, heterosexual, at least, you know, in practice.
Right.
I mean, he was able to put forth so many different areas about sexuality and gender and everything. And I still don't think he gets enough credit for that in a lot of ways, you know, for really just how queer he really was, you know, or how queer his art was, you know, because I think, what was going on in what he was doing in the 90s and stuff really kind of turned back the clock a little bit. Like, I look at I know I'm not the only one who makes this connection, but his 90s were kind of like Bowie's 80s, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of a turnaround, you know, because like when Bowie was like, yeah, I'm bisexual and always has been. And then, you know, in the 80s, he dyes his hair blonde and gets fit and he's like, oh, no, I wasn't, you know?
Right.
And kind of becomes like, you know, just like this crooner ladies man type or whatever. Prince did a similar thing in the 90s, of course, when he was getting all like trying to be all hardcore and hard and everything like that. And he certainly wasn't, I mean, at the same time that had its own kind of camp value too, you know, like really kind of, I think, unintentional.
Yeah.
So I think with like the rising like politics of the LGBTQ community and stuff, you know, Prince definitely was not going to fit into any of that.
Right.
You know, at that time.
It's almost like, you know, it's almost like he was trying to juggle too many identities, because obviously
yeah.
he started out with this, just wanting to upset any kind of categorization. And so, uh-huh. I mean, you know, it's, I feel like I always end up citing controversy in these discussions, but it's all like right there. It's he's, am I black or white? Am I straight or gay? Like he's,
yeah.
he's deliberately upsetting these binaries.
Yeah.
And it, and then, but, you know, I think he was very susceptible to criticism about his identity politics because, you know, uh-huh. as the '80s go on and he is more aggressively courting a sort of crossover audience, people are asking, you know, well, what happened to your black fan base? So then he kind of doubles down on the black thing. Uh-huh. And it's almost like it got to the point where he couldn't keep up being androgynous and, you know, and sort of like trans, I don't want, transracial is,
yeah.
is a bad term to use, but, you know, he couldn't keep up with, sort of muddying these identities so much. Mm-hmm. He kind of had to, I don't know, for whatever reason, it's like he had to choose. It's almost.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, in that, the Matt Thorne book, there's a, I believe it's that one. There's a really great quote from, Lisa, who says they're sort of reflecting on the 80s versus 90s times. She says, you know, when we were doing the revolution and pre-revolution, it was like, it was about just asking questions. Mm. You know, it wasn't really about like, provide, okay, this is what we're doing. It was more just, yeah, like, am I black or white? Am I straight or gay? There's not an answer to that. You know what I mean? It's like, he's like offering it that to you and kind of reflecting the question back to you, like sort of, why are you asking me that? Why does it matter? You know, and I'm going to be intentionally vague. And, you know, he was one of those artists where just one of those pop stars where you could really you could take from him what you know what you needed how he could speak to you you know right. And she said the difference was that you know in the 90s it became like too clear actually like what he was or what he was trying to put forth you know and it just you know, the mystery was gone you know mm. and that was definitely you know that was definitely missing so.
When would you say that you kind of, because I know that you're, just from our conversations previous to this, I know that you're one of the people, like myself and like a lot of people, who sort of fell out of being, mm-hmm. you know, hardcore mm-hmm. into Prince. When would you say that he sort of lost you?
Graffiti Bridge.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. We've that talked about Graffiti moment. Bridge before.
Yeah. Yeah, that is absolutely the moment when I just was like, okay, you know what? I think I'm done with Prince now for a while. Yeah. I couldn't deal with that movie. I was on board all the way up to Love Sexy. Around Love mm-hmm. Sexy, I was like, you know, it feels like something is getting a little bit muddled here, you know, and like it's getting a bit. Yeah, I'm not quite so into this anymore. And then, you know, the Batman album, and I was like, okay, I see why he's doing this. You know, he needs to do a commercial statement and everything. But, yeah, Graffiti Bitch just really lost me. The movie was just abominable.
Oh.
And I wasn't crazy. I tried to get into the album, but he was really trying too hard, you know, at that point to me. And, you know, I was also growing up, I was also getting into other things. I was into a lot of different other music and, you know, it wasn't speaking to me like it was in my adolescence anymore.
Right.
But I was always still following him. I mean, I would always be curious to what he was doing. I wouldn't say I was buying every album,
yeah.
but I was still getting them. And I was still, you know, every time he did something, I would be curious to see what it was, you know. So... But through the 90s, yeah, nothing really grabbed hold of me too much. It wasn't until like a really satisfying album happened again for me. It was 3121 is when I got kind of really on board again.
One mix. Turn it up.
Let's go. That one did kind of feel like, for me, it's always like, what excites me about a Prince album is if it's a little bit weird. Like, so
yeah.
When I heard the title track of 3121, I was like, oh, this is weird Prince. He's back, you know,
because
even as much as I liked, you know, I went to see him on the Musicology tour, and Musicology wasn't a great album, but it was fun.
Yeah, that one is like too self-consciously, like, you know, old school.
Right.
That doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah. But, you know, you hear the Camille voice come back, and that's always been what has in his later career, what's kind of made me perk my ears up again.
Yeah.
Same thing happened again with Artificial Age, actually. You know,
parts of that album were so strange. Totally. Yeah, I like that. That was such a great album. It is such a great album. I was so happy when it came out. And to me, that's really his last album, actually. Yeah. I mean, Hit and Run, Volume 2 kind of just sort of seemed like a little extra afterthoughts.
Right.
But you reminded me of, you know, still how he could, I mean, how he packed the punch in Sign of the Times in terms of gender and sexuality again. I mean, you know, I was into Around the World in a Day and really into Parade. Actually, I love Parade more now, even ever, more than ever. Mm-hmm. When Sign of the Times came out, that was just like, okay, he is absolutely back. This is it. This is a masterpiece. And with something like If I Was Your Girlfriend, I was like, man, it's so great that he's still taking these chances, you know, because, you know, like I mentioned that thing about R&B radio in like the DC area at that time. I mean, the 80s were conservative in general, but R&B radio, I mean, you had people like, I don't know, like Freddie Jackson or, you know, singers like that were just like, you know, the smooth love a man, you know,
right.
And like really like slick and, you know, well-dressed and moneyed and stuff like that. And they were all, it was so heteronormative. No deviation, and there was no room for anything even like openly gay or queer or whatever at all. And then for Prince to come along with something like If I Was Your Girlfriend, or even before that in Parade, you know, with Sometimes the Snow Is in April, I mean, that's practically a love song.
Right.
You know, it's just like he didn't write it that way. It's about his character or it's about his alter ego, but I mean, still, he knew what he was singing, you know?
Right.
And I think that he really, you know, that drew some lines for his heterosexual male audience, you know, for a lot of them. Because I think that they were like, I'm not sure where he's going with this. You know what I mean? Like, what is this? He's speaking about Tracy and he's saying, he and my friend and I miss my friend and I love him so much. I mean, that was really, really daring, you know? Whether or not he was actually gay himself, I mean, this was really ballsy, you know, and that's Prince being himself, and that's Prince being an individual, and that's what will forever speak to me, you know.
Right.
And also, and I another song I remember that sort of ping came up was which another song I don't understand why people don't investigate this more is Anesthesia. In the lyric when he's like, "Have you ever wanted so much you'll take anyone, boy or girl?"
Yeah.
I'm like, am I the only one who hears this?
Right.
he just said, you'll take anyone, boy or girl. You know, he's speaking about, you know, he's been in that position.
Yeah. And you know, there's another song. I mean, this is like very, very different tone. But I was just listening again the other day to Movie Star.
Check me out. I just walk in, don't even find a seat. Just threw my coat right on the floor. Grab somebody for a quick dance. Boy, girl, don't matter no more. I'm hot. Mix was right. Bold. Lord.
It's very curious. Like I don't know even where to go with this because there is no, you know, there's no evidence that it seems like if Prince was experimenting sexually, it seems like by this time somebody would have talked.
That's you know? Exactly the thing. I mean, especially now, like more and more people are talking about all the other aspects, like his recording process and his spirituality. And, you know, now the gag orders are all lifted and everything, and he can't do anything about it, obviously, anymore. Anyways, And so, but still we have this void of like, of actual concrete gay male interaction in right. his life. You know, I haven't read anything. Plenty of lesbian influence with Wendy and Lisa and beyond. Plenty of female influence and, of course, heterosexual male influence. But where are the gay men in his story?
Right.
I don't know. And it's so, it's that makes it even more compelling that he's able to, like, put on these guises and these airs of, you know, of campiness and write these lyrics and put these things forward. It's like, where did it come from, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it had to come from somewhere. Right. Because, like you mentioned, I mean, it's sort of validating to hear you say these things, because Morris and Jerome have always read gay to me. Like, you know, maybe not literally gay men, but it's camp. It's totally.
Oh, camp. I mean, it gets even gayer in Under the Cherry.
Yes.
I'm so like. Are they sleeping together? Like, I mean,
they're definitely
like,
living together, and Jerome is definitely like sprinkling rose petals in Prince's bath.
No, I'm so like, how did this get past anyway? I mean, like, and it's really like no wonder at all that movie flopped, because I mean,
right.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty crappy movie, but like, what is going? I mean, it's like, wait a minute, he's into this woman supposedly, and there's no sparks between him and right. Kristen Scott at all, you know, and like. And then he's like in the tub with Jerome, and like, are they making fun of it? Are they like, what is going? It's just like, yeah.
Never danced before midnight, but if you insist,
yeah. There seems to be a little bit of like joking about it, but it, I don't. It's strange.
I know.
To say the least.
I mean, it can't. It's like it's one big inside joke, but like from the outside, you're like. You two are gay.
Right. That's a whole different alternative ending to that movie. And then, but it still ends with Jerome like mourning. Christopher Tracy. Yeah.
I know.
It's bizarre.
To the tune of Sometimes It Snows in April, which is Prince talking about how much he misses a man.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, there's so much in there that's like, yeah, it just hasn't been. I don't think it's been investigated enough, really. Not deeply enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it makes people nervous. I think. And,
totally.
And there's a, you know, there's a distinction between, like, to me, I think of Prince as a queer artist, but not a gay artist, because there's just so much that he did to blur those lines.
Yeah.
That, whether or not that was a label that he claimed.
Queer wasn't even a thing.
Right, right. Yeah. Queer studies started, what, like the late 90s, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Sort of an empowering, sort of like turning the word on its head. You know, it had a negative connotation, and now it has an empowering connotation. You know?
Right.
But yeah, that wasn't until the 90s.
Right. But it was just something he blurred those lines so thoroughly and so, I think, purposefully, that no matter what he did, you know, like no matter what his own sexuality or his own identity was.
Yeah.
It's something that I think you have to consider. Mm-hmm. I think it's if I was your girlfriend, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
That was a bold song to put out, because, I mean,
yeah.
He put it out as a single.
And
without hearing the song, you know, people were like, what does this mean? Like, what is he trying to say?
Right.
It ended up being, you know, the relationship he's describing is a heterosexual one, but still kind of it's not a traditional heterosexual.
I mean, that's more of a gender fuck kind of.
Right. Right.
You know, that's not really about us. That's not so much like, oh, this is a sexuality thing. This is very much more, it's more like it challenges gender stereotypes and gender norms, which is also very powerful and also scares a lot of people. You know, like we were talking about, I mean, on the Prince podcast, how Michael, the interviewer, you know, I was a little disappointed because, you know, he would kind of explain this away as like, oh, that, you know, that's Prince being wild, you know, the wild pimp. You know,
right.
He's kind of just pimping, you know. Mm. He's like, he's dressed like a pimp. Yeah, and pimps wear makeup, you know. He's pimping. That's what he's doing when he's flamboyant like that, you know. It's like, well, it's more than that, you know. And that's kind of, that's like a very hetero sexist kind of kind of way of explaining it away, sort of like, it's like, oh yeah, you know, he dresses like that, but you know, he's really into pussy, so it's okay.
Right. Right. Yeah, know? I think I agree.
It's too easy to kind of explain it away like that. No, it's like it goes deeper than that. It's more nuanced than that.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, so the pimp aesthetic, I don't think has a place for a song like If I Was Your Girlfriend.
No, I mean, he definitely had a pimp thing going on for sure.
Right. But yeah, he was.
I think that that sometimes that's used to like explain things away, kind of.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's an aspect, but there are other aspects that I don't think you can explain away in that same.
Yeah. Way. I mean, it's probably, you know, his sexuality or his relations to the gay community, the gay male community, is probably one of the most maddening things about his identity. But you're dealing with an artist who is constantly usurping his identity, you know, right, or upending his identity, you know, with all of his name changes and stuff like that. I mean, the symbol, of course, being the like biggest example of that or whatever. But he's not going to give you any direct answers about that. Definitely right. Not. Never right. Gave you direct answers about anything. So I mean, we can be theorizing about this until dog's age, but I was thinking, like, you know, that's also really not the point, because what matters is how, for me, is how this music speaks to me and like what it, you know, what it meant to me and what I got from it and what, you know, what I could get from this message. And, you know, in my formative years, that was a very, very empowering message, you know, because what I was getting from other corners was, you know, okay, you have sex, you're going to die. You know,
yeah.
Basically,
yeah,
that message that was pounded into my head at, you know, during my adolescence, you right. know, and Prince was pretty much the exact opposite of that. You know, not only will sex will make you free, sex will get you closer to God. Sex will make, you know, sex is the party. Sex will bring you uptown, you know, and like there couldn't have been a better, you know, time. There couldn't have been better timing for that. So as a sexual person, gay or otherwise, you know, yeah, that's it really, really spoke to me. And I know that he spoke to a lot of other gay men, and I'd really like to hear more from African-American gay men about this too. Which I'm not African-American, but I really think that's a voice that's woefully unheard. So
I agree. And I have to imagine that a lot of, you know, I mean, maybe not in Minneapolis. Obviously, Minneapolis was largely white. And, you know, I think his early following there was not necessarily gay. But when he would go on tour, like for Dirty Mind, you know, the shows in New York and all of those other places, I have to imagine that he had a solid following that was both gay and black.
I had some, of course I have African American friends, and it was like, it was just like, I think it was probably very freeing for the ones that I was friends with to see that, you know, to see an African American man be able to do that and get as far as he got, you know, and, yeah, I just imagine that must have been extremely empowering.
You want some more? All right. Rock and roll. Everybody put your hands together. Everybody put your hands together. Everybody put your hands together. One, two, one, two, three, four. Show you silly little girl, and I'll drag you. I can't give everything you want, but I can take it to a restaurant. If you're not hungry, I'll drag you on. If that man don't do you good, come on over to my neighborhood. Jump in the car, honey, I'll drag you on. If you're tired of the masturbate, baby girl, we go on a date. If you like it, honey, I'll drag you on.
But yeah, it's interesting what you, I think that's true that sort of like regardless of what happened later, nothing, you can't rewrite the history of him opening these doors and presenting this very liberating image. Like no matter how many times he sort of censored himself on stage or, you know, started wearing just like suits and he definitely, or even his comments, you know, later on, I think you mentioned when we first started talking around, you know, mid 2000s, he made some comments to the press that were, I think, at the very least, troubling in their kind of in the way that he was addressing homosexuality. But even, you know, no matter what he did later on, I think the significance of his identity early on ultimately outweighed that. And, you know, and I think you've seen that after he died. Like people aren't talking about, you know, Prince as he was. People are talking about Prince as he was to them, like what he meant to them.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he gets, he's gotten so much shit for, you know, those quotes, like the one about, you know, he thumped his Bible and said, "Oh God," right. Of course, that's a classic one. And then there's another one, which I remember, I can't remember if he was talking to Arsenio, like maybe on the new Arsenio show, or maybe it was Tavish Smiley. I forget who the actual interviewer was, but he was talking about his hair. And it was late in his life when he grew his hair out again. And the interviewer was like, "Oh, you know, so you, so how's it like, you know, when you go out to people, are you running into people with your fro?" And he's like, "Well, you know, some people, they always want to come up and touch my hair." And he goes, "And it's usually guys." And he kind of made this like kind of smirk on his face, like, "Oh, I don't want that to happen." You know, and that's right. Like a dumb, stupid, like the not even locker room level joke. You know what I mean? And it's dumb. And then it's like, oh God, you know, but then it's like, I'm not going to like pore over this or obsess over it. Like he's being homophobic.
Right.
You know, it's just, he's talking to this guy and he's just making some off the cuff dumb joke. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, trying to pore over like things that Prince says as like, you know, written in stone when you know that like a month later he's going to contradict himself.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's just a losing game. So again, it's just like, don't, I think always trying to get like right to like, who is the real person and who did, you know, how did he get to this point and stuff like that. I think it's fascinating. I think it's interesting, but ultimately we project onto pop stars what we want, you know what
right.
I mean? We get from them what we need, and he is one of the biggest pop stars I know that you could do that with, you know,
right.
For me. And I think that's all, that's his legacy and that's his influence and that's his power. And that's definitely where I'm coming from in terms of, you know, a fan and culturally and influence wise.
I don't know if this is even worth going back to, but I did think, I was just thinking about, you know, we were talking about the 90s and how he sort of like he kind of dropped the ambiguity a little bit, but then you did, you said, you know, but it was still kind of camp.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. Like I was thinking about the Get Off at the VMAs, like the kind of Caligula thing where there were a lot of like, you know, muscular shirtless men. And then he, of course he has the butt out pants. I do think it's interesting. Like, I don't know what it was about him that it's like, he couldn't help it. Like when he was sort of presenting himself as this, you know, macho man, there was still something just like camp about him.
Well, it's because his machismo, much like I think his spirituality, it was a self-made invention. That was machismo to him. You know what I mean? So when he would try to do something a bit more generically macho, like the gun microphone or whatever, like that, or all the like cursing and the hardcore rapping and stuff, they were just like, no, that's not you. You know, like that's not the ass, like the ass out of the pants. Now that's Prince Machismo. You know? Right. And it's sort of like, you know, that's why I just listened to, I forget what her name was, but the one you talked to is writing the book about his spirituality.
Oh yeah. Erica. Mm-hmm.
And I think his sexuality and his spirituality are very similar in terms of, self-invention, because, like, you know, Love Sexy, that's like his own religion, you know, that's like the religion of Prince. You know, that only could come up with, and, you know, it's the Church of Prince. And I, you know, I think all of his work has that kind of his own sort of his own religious invention in there. So when he becomes a Jehovah's Witness, which is like, you know, a pretty standard, very conservative religion, that's why it's just such a like disconnect there. Cause you're like, really? You know, the one who pretty much makes all of his own rules, you know?
Right.
And I think that's very much true in terms of, it's a very similar thing about his own sexuality. It's like, it's a Prince sexuality.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that explains the camp thing too, right? Because that's what camp is like obvious artifice. And that's, and so when he's presenting, when he's doing this like caricatured macho man, then it reads artificial in a way that is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, totally. And then, or it's just completely, you know, or his artifice is so, it's almost like this one big inside joke that like nobody can get in, you know, nobody can understand. Like, again, like Under the Cherry Moon, like some of the banter between him and Jerome is like, huh? like what just happened? and in that way, that's actually quite fascinating, you know. Mm.
So I guess the last thing that occurs to me to ask you, as you mentioned, you know, we just talked about what I was, you know, my conversation with Erica, and you mentioned that you were raised Catholic. So how did the religious element of Prince, like, how did you kind of process that? Because it was always there.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot too. I mean, that was another thing that really struck a chord with me, is because, you know, I had to go to church every Sunday, and I had a lot of problems with, you know, just church and religion, and it was, I had lots of conflicts with it. And then, of course, when I, you know, discovered my sexuality and discovered the church's, Catholic Church's extremely limited and totally unlivable viewpoint on that particular topic, especially back then, is when, you know, I was pulling away from all religions in general, ultimately. But so then, you know, so yeah, but that was another thing, was just like, wow, he's having this struggle too. That's why I looked, that's kind of what I thought about. It was just like, it wasn't really something I could put my finger on, but I was glad it was there, because I could relate to the conflict, or him trying to resolve the conflict between sex and carnality and spirituality. You know, and he did it in such an interesting way, like, you know, just in the middle of controversy, this incredibly funky song, which is bringing up all these topics. And now I'm just going to throw the Our Father in there.
Right.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
For like no real reason, you know, or like, or you have to make up your own reason why it's there. You know, mm-hmm. I love that. I love that kind of ambiguity, you know, and same with Darling Nikki, like, or another example was the end of Let's Pretend We're Married.
Yeah. With,
you know, I mean, don't even get me started on like the brilliance of the 1999 album, you know, like track by track. But if you just take that one from the beginning, just this minimal beat, and then it goes into this totally lust-filled party song, and then it goes into this like psychedelic instrumental part, and somehow it just lands on this thing about God and a spoken word piece about going to the afterlife. And, and then now we're done. I mean, in the span of 9 minutes, or however long it is, and it never gets boring, you know? And the way that he was able to take his time and incorporate all those things, including a spirituality, along with in everything else, really, really struck a chord with me. And I dug that he was trying to make something, to me, it was like he was trying to make something new. He was trying to get out of religion or spirituality what worked for him, but wasn't going to be tied down with dogma.
Mm.
I think that's how I interpreted it. It's like I'm gonna do this my way. You know, I'm not gonna reject it out of hand. I know that there's something there, but I'm gonna kind of try and push things forward the best way that I can. You know, and I could definitely relate to that.
So, is there anything else that you want to say?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure there is. I mean, we could do a whole podcast about Graffiti Bridge, probably.
Oh God,
it wouldn't be very praiseworthy. I can tell you.
Right.
Let's see. At the moment, I'm getting ready to release a new album.
Yeah, I was gonna. Yeah, let's talk about that.
If I can have a little plug for a moment, that's gonna come out at the end of next month. So I'm really busy with the rollout about that, and how this relates to what we're talking about is that a lot of the lyrics and the kind of mood of this album were influenced by what was going on in 2016, with just, you know, musical heroes dropping left and right. Including, of course, Prince. I mean, it couldn't get, you know, that's like, you know, obviously my biggest hero. And it was incredibly heartbreaking, you know. And it's not like any of the songs like directly about that, but I think the kind of mood of that and sort of how, you know, that made me feel initially is kind of in the music of this album. So there's that. And, you know, what I find really interesting about all of this is like the your podcast and the Dance Music Sex Romance Facebook thing is that this collective mourning that we're all going through, this is going to be going on for a long time.
Right.
You know, I didn't realize how like much of an explosion and what a communal kind of thing this is going to be. But it really is, and it's only just started.
Yeah, it's crazy. Were you someone who sort of like did Prince's death kind of bring you back into you know, like were you thinking about him a lot before he died? Or
oh yeah,
because I know that I was definitely kind of sucked back in by his passing.
Well, I mean, I would go through phases. I mean, he was definitely always there. He was always an influence. I was always listening to his music, and I was, you know, I had tons of bootlegs, and I had a lot of the books and everything like that. Since his death, that focus has pretty much gone completely stratospheric. I would say. I mean, you know, the orgy of bootlegs It's just, yeah, it's blowing my mind, and it's definitely multiplied my obsession. So yeah, I've definitely been sucked down the rabbit hole again, but I was kind of always there to begin with.
Well, it was great talking to you, and I'm looking forward to hearing the album. It comes out, you said, in October.
I have a single that's coming out on the 22nd of this month. It's called Turn.
Okay.
Called Turn It. The album itself is called Shady Lights, and people can go to my website, snacksonline.org. And they can also go to the Shady Lights page on Facebook if they just search Shady Lights. And also I have a Snacks fan page. It's SNAX. It's called Snacks Musician. That's my Facebook page. And the album is called Shady Lights, and it's coming out October 27th. So this video is coming and a single is coming. And so I invite everybody to please check it out.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks again. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it was definitely a pleasure. I'm so glad we got a chance to finally do this. So.
Ooh, yeah. I'm a sucker.
Thanks so much for listening. And once again, you can check out Paul's music. His new single as Snacks, Turn It, is actually playing right now. Hopefully he's okay with that. I didn't ask. So you can hear that. You can check him out at snacksonline.org. Check out his Facebook page, Shady Lights, and his other Facebook page, Snacks Musician. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. And in the meantime, you can check us out on princesongs.org.
Give me body, make me flow. Turn it into something special. Turn it into something good. And for good measure.
Just tell me, do you want me to? Do you want to dance floor like the nasties? Do it.